There we go.
Good evening. Tuesday night Bible study on the art of dying. Yes, it is an art, isn't it? And I think this is, one, two, three, four, five, six, seven, week seven? I think we're on week seven here. So we're kind of chugging through this book called The Art of Dying, this medieval, Middle Ages book. And so tonight, we're going to talk about the fourth temptation, which is the temptation of the devil concerning vainglory. So if you go to page 68. So the previous temptation, just to remind you that this unknown monk talked about, was the temptation for patience. Of course, all these temptations confront us when we're facing death, but they also confront us throughout our lives as well. So this one, the temptation of the devil concerning vainglory. Well, what is vainglory? Well, I think what he's referring to is pride, and it's right there in the writing. So I'm going to read most of this chapter. As you know, these chapters are like four pages. They're not very long. So I'm on page 69 in your photocopies there. In the fourth temptation, the devil appeals to the sick person's vanity and complacency, a form of spiritual pride. By this, the devil threatens especially the devout, religious, and faultless. For when he cannot lead a man astray from his faith or to despair or impatience, the devil then approaches him through his own self-satisfaction, casting thoughts such as these into his mind. Oh, how firm you are in faith, how strong in hope, and how steadfastly patient in your infirmity. Oh, how many good things you have worked for. You should take tremendous pride in these things, since you are not like the others who have committed endless sins and nevertheless, with a single groan of remorse, attain the heavenly kingdoms. Therefore, the kingdom of heaven cannot be denied you, because you have fought rightly. Receive, therefore, the crown prepared for you, and you will take a higher seat than the rest. Through these and similar words, the devil strives most urgently to lead the dying person toward spiritual pride or vainglory. I think this temptation is particularly directed at God's faithful people. Because what do we have an instinct to do throughout life, but especially when we're on our deathbed or facing death? We'll say, well, look at all the stuff I've done. Well, I've been a Lutheran. That's the most faithful of all denominations, you know, we might think. Which, frankly, I do think. So we're right there. And we say, well, look at, I've tithed, I've been a regular churchgoer, I've gone to Bible study. I was at Pastor Measles Bible study. Look at all that I've done. I deserve to be in heaven. Whoops. You just went one step too far, right? Doing all those things are good. To give a tithe, to be in church, to go to Bible study, to be faithful all your life, that's all good. That doesn't mean you deserve to be in heaven. That's the step. You went too far. And the devil tempts us into this spiritual pride, this vain glory, vain vanity. It's about me and glory, giving yourself glory. Look at me, you think in your head. Look how good I've been. I'm basically a good person, so God will have to take me into heaven. No, we can never do, you guys know this, this is Lutheran theology at its core. We can never do enough good things to overcome our bad things. We are sinful at the core. We are brought into heaven by God, by Jesus, simply out of his grace and mercy. Because he loves us, because he loves you. And so we have to remember that, always. We can't rely on our good works. Yes, anybody listening, I'm making air quotes with my fingers. We can't rely on those. Should we do good works? Yes. But that's for the benefit of our neighbor. That's to help one another. That's not to earn us a place in heaven. So, look at that little woodcut there. So remember, this is, you know, written in like the 15th century. Look at that woodcut. And look at all of, there's the dying person, and around him are all these demons. And what are they doing? They're giving him crowns. You deserve the crown of life, they're saying. Well, you will have the crown of life, but not because you deserve it. Because God is loving and merciful. That's it. Okay? Alright, so back to the writing part there. I'm going to keep going on. In light of this, keep in mind that this sort of pride is to be especially avoided. First, because pride alone turned the angel Lucifer into the devil, And likewise, pride makes man like the devil. Isn't that true? Pride turned Lucifer into the devil? Yeah, that's true, actually. That's from the Bible. Lucifer wanted to be like God, and God kicked him out of heaven. Second, because through pride, man seems to commit blasphemy, since he presumes that whatever good he has received from God comes from himself. Third, because his self-satisfaction might become so great that he would be damned for it. All right. So, where is it that we hear that he presumes that whatever good he has received from God comes from himself? Well, there you see a footnote there, 1 Corinthians 4:7. Let me look that up and read it for you real quick, because that actually is a good key verse. 1 Corinthians 4:7 tells us just this exact thing. I should have had this already open. Sorry. See how quick my fingers can work. 1 Corinthians 4:7. This is what it says. For who sees anything different in you? What do you have that you did not receive? If then you received it, why do you boast as if you did not receive it? This is Paul chastising the Corinthians who thought they earned everything they had. And he's saying, Paul is telling the Corinthians here in this very passage, if you ever want to look it up, it's right there. You didn't receive these things, they were given to you. Are all the blessings we have given to us by God? Yes. How many of you remember Pastor Hugh's statement, which I've heard him say a couple of times, even before he retired, and I'm willing to guess he probably still says in his Thursday Bible study. Do any of you attend that? I'm not sure anybody in here does. He has a little saying. He says, we cannot imagine all the ways that God could take from us our blessings that we think belong to us. You think you have all these blessings? God has multiple ways that he could teach you a lesson by taking your blessings away. So I know these come from you. Please don't take my blessings away. I want them. Please don't take them away. So I'm with a little tongue-in-cheek prayer, but yeah, we can pray that. That's okay.
Well, you figure that's what hell is.
That's what hell is, yes.
God taking everything away.
Yes, exactly. That's what hell is. God taking away all his blessings. And you're left with nothing. Yeah. And then here, the third point made in this little bit, it says, third, because self-satisfaction might become so great that he would be damned for it. That's the devil's ultimate goal. That we've become so swelled with pride in ourselves that it drifts into unbelief of God, or disbelief that my things come from God. You trust in yourself rather than trusting in God. Okay? And that's what would condemn you with this temptation.
Well, it kind of goes with the parable that Jesus talked about, the Pharisee and the sinner praying in the temple.
Yeah. Yes, the Pharisee, thank you, God, that I'm not like that guy.
Right.
And the publican in the back is saying, God, just forgive me my sins. Which is the right attitude. Yeah, right. Thank you, Andy. That was a good thought. Okay, so then the second part of this chapter, good inspiration of the angel against vainglory. So if you turn the page there, again I'll read a chunk of this. Against the fourth temptation of the devil, the angel gives good inspiration, saying, wretched one, why are you prideful, crediting your constancy and faith, hope, and patience to yourself, when it should be ascribed to God alone? Nothing good comes from yourself, as the Lord says, without me you can do nothing. And elsewhere it is written, do not be arrogant, or boast, or praise yourself excessively, or presume anything about yourself, or attribute anything good to yourself. And the Lord says, he who exalts himself will be humbled. So there's a couple of good quotes right there from Scripture, John and Matthew. And by the way, Jesus said both of those. And again, unless you become like a child, you will not enter into the kingdom of heaven. Thus, humble yourself before God, and you will be lifted up. The Lord says, he who humbles himself will be exalted. So instead of being filled with pride, what should we have instead? Humility. Now, a little word about humility. Because I had this mistaken idea of humility growing up through confirmation, even post-confirmation. It's like, so am I supposed to, if I'm humble, does that mean I think poorly of myself? That's not what humility means. You think, well, pride is thinking highly of yourself. You know, pointing to yourself and, well, look how good I am, look how great I am. Yes, that's pride. But the opposite of that, from a godly perspective, humility is not thinking down upon yourself, like you're worthless or you can't do anything. That's not true humility. True humility is thinking of others first before yourself. Not putting yourself at the front of the line, but thinking of what others need before what you need. That's godly humility. Okay? So don't get mixed up with this mistaken notion that humility thinks poor of yourself. God doesn't want us to have a poor self-image, to be a woe is me, look at how bad I am kind of personality or attitude. That's not God's desire. He just wants you to think of others first. Well, I have plenty, and I can share. Most people are in need, so I'm going to share with them. You're thinking of others rather than thinking, well, I'm going to hoard my stuff because I've got enough, and I want to make sure I have enough for the rest of my life. No, we need to share. And we know that's part of charity in the Bible. So it's thinking of others first. That's what biblical humility is. Okay? Does it make sense? Any questions? Am I talking too fast? Yeah, Delmar.
Think how humble I am, it makes me proud.
Yes, yeah, yes, exactly. And that's a good little thought. I know I should have thought of that too, because he's like, well, look at me, how humble I am. Well, guess what? You just destroyed that humility, because now you're prideful in your humility. Yeah, it's kind of ironic, but yeah, that's very true. Yeah. All right. Continue on a little bit here, back in the, on page 73. And Augustine says, if you humble yourself, God comes down upon you. If you exalt yourself, God withdraws from you. I didn't know Augustine said that. Now, he's an early church father from like the 4th century. That's a great little saying to think about. If you humble yourself, God will come to you. And he'll be with you and protect you. But if you exalt yourself, God says, well, obviously you don't think you need me, so I'm going to withdraw. Hence, turn your mind from pride, which made Lucifer, at one point the most beautiful of angels, the most deformed of devils. Pride cast him from the heights of heaven to the depths of hell, and was the reason for all sin. Thus, Bernard says, the beginning of every sin and the cause of all perdition is pride. And again, take away this vice, and without effort, all the other vices are cut off. That's an interesting thought. I've not pondered that myself. It's something to think about maybe in your own little quiet moments or devotions. Is pride the source of all sin? I guess sort of it is. Because all sin is placing something before God. So it's thinking of yourself or something pertaining to yourself before thinking about what God wants. So, you know, that might be true. I'd have to ponder it a little bit, but that's a good thought. And so, two things must especially be noted whenever the dying person perceives that he is tempted by pride. First, he should consider how pride so displeased God that on a single occasion of it, he banished from heaven the noblest of creatures, Lucifer. And then skip down to the end. Second, he should consider how humility pleased God to such an extent that in its preeminent manifestation, the glorious Virgin Mary conceived God and was exalted above the choirs of angels. Actually, that is a good example to think about. Lucifer was so filled with pride, he was cast down from the heights of heaven. And what do we know about Mary? Now, I don't think the Catholics would say they worship Mary, although it seems like they are on the verge, you know, on the borderline of that. But we certainly don't worship Mary, but we certainly, uphold her as a godly example, and that's a good thing. She was humble. That's, I think, the biggest credit to her. She said, let it need to be as you have said. She just accepted the word of the angel. That's incredible. This 14 or 15 year old young lady who's scared witless because now all of a sudden she's told she's pregnant, she hasn't even been married yet. And she says, in humility, let it be to me. And she is, considered among the shining examples of God's family, of a young woman there. So those are two things to do to fight against this temptation of pride in your life. I want to give you another thing. So if you want to write some notes in your margins or on the bottom or whatever, I would say here's the thing to do from a Lutheran perspective. Another thing you can do, if you find yourself being tempted by pride, give thanks. And the reason I mention this, I did preach a whole sermon on this at Thanksgiving a handful of years ago. Give thanks for everything. You can open your catechism and think about all the stuff that Martin Luther mentions God gives us. If you look at the Lord's Prayer or at the Apostles' Creed, house and home, food and drink, land, animals, and all that I have, he says in the catechism. If you try to give thanks for everything, even the smallest thing, thank you, God, for the TV that I'm watching tonight. Thank you, God, for having a nice bed to sleep in last night. Thank you, God, for the beautiful weather we have today and for the rain that will water the earth tomorrow. Every possible thing, you give thanks for all those detailed, little, tiny little things. You'll realize how much it comes from God and not from you. It's God's blessing upon you. And that helps to melt the pride that bubbles up within our hearts. So some of my direction or thoughts for you would be, if you struggle or find yourself tempted by pride, focus on giving thanks to God for everything you can possibly think of. I've actually tried it a few times in my own life, particularly around Thanksgiving time, because, we're talking about giving thanks, and so I'm like, I'm going to try and give thanks for everything I can possibly think of. And I think 20 minutes later, I started to drift to sleep because I was still going in my prayer. I'm like, holy cow, there's a lot of stuff that God has blessed us with, isn't there? Lots. Thank you for the warm shoes I have because it's getting cold outside, on Thanksgiving or whatever. Thank you for the beautiful leaves. Thank you for, everything. That will help to beat down that temptation of pride. Okay? All right. A moment or two for questions or comments. All right. Very good. Well, I talked pretty fast there, and we didn't even have coffee tonight. All right. If you do happen to think of some questions, write them down and feel free to ask them either later tonight or, next week or whatever. So our special guest tonight is Laura Freeling. I bet at least some of you know her. She's a member here. She and her husband are members here. Although I can point out, we have that habit in this church, many churches, of being either early church people or late church people. Well, I can tell you Laura and her husband are late church people. And some of you are early church people. I know that. So you might not have seen her as much as you would otherwise if you came to the other church service. My wife is that way too. I'll mention somebody's name at church and she'll say, "Now who is that again? I've heard that name. I can't picture them." I said, "They're early church people. You probably can't picture them." So Laura is our county Register of Deeds. So she's got some good information for us, and we'll answer some questions about ladybird deeds and other stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
Wonderful.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Let me help you with it. How do you want it? You can just you want this out? Okay.
Perfect.
There we go.
Perfect.
So yeah, you can just hit spacebar or enter, or there's the page down right there.
Okay, awesome. Thank you. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
So I appreciate being here. Thanks, Pastor, for the offer. I just wanted to talk to you a little bit about the Office of the Register of Deeds. I know that you guys have gone through some estate planning and other things. Some of that will eventually come around to our office. And I definitely feel that if you have a little bit of knowledge about the totality of it all, then it makes the steps that you have to do easier. So I kind of might be giving you more information than you're looking for right now, but in the hopes that it's easier for you when you have to do the steps that you are doing. So, of course, our office is located at the Administration Center in St. Joe on Main Street. I've given you all my card, a couple brochures. Feel free to call me anytime. So you can come set up an appointment. You can stop by the office. I'm happy to talk to anybody. I try to make myself available. And also I feel as far as my position is elected, and as far as an elected official, I feel it's important to reach out to the constituents, to the property owners, to the residents of Berrien County, and to educate them when I can about things that are happening within our office, services that are available in our office.
And this is an election season for you, right?
It is, thank you.
You were telling me beforehand that she's up for election again this fall, yes. So vote for Laura.
Yeah.
Although, when did you say the filing deadline is today?
It was passed, 4 p.m. today.
Okay. So you're running unopposed.
Unopposed.
All right.
Yes.
Very good.
So thank you.
You're going to win.
You're going to win.
Yes. I like your foresight, your positivity. So today I just wanted to talk a little bit, like I said, about the office, about land records in general, how they're important, how the content of the document, of your deed, actually can be very important. What I see in my office as far as questionable practices, I just want to kind of forewarn you guys of things that are out there, just to make you aware and so that you're alert about those types of things. And then hopefully we'll have time for questions and answers as well. But first I wanted to read a little excerpt from Jeremiah, chapter 32. Jeremiah said, "The word of the Lord came to me, Hanamel, son of Shallum, your uncle is going to come to you and say, buy my field at Anathoth, because as nearest relative, it is your right and your duty to buy it. Then just as the Lord had said, my cousin Hanamel came to me in the courtyard of the guard and said, buy my field at Anathoth in the territory of Benjamin. Since it is your right to redeem it and possess it, buy it for yourself. I knew this was the word of the Lord, so I bought the field at Anathoth from my cousin Hanamel and weighed out for him 17 shekels of silver. I signed and sealed the deed and had it witnessed and weighed out the silver on scales. I took the deed of purchase, the sealed copy containing the terms and the conditions, as well as the unsealed copy, and I gave the deed to Baruch, son of Neriah and son of
Mahasiah.
Thank you. In the presence of my cousin Hanamel, and of the witnesses who had signed the deed, and of all the Jews sitting in the courtyard of the guard. In their presence I gave Baruch these instructions. This is what the Lord Almighty, the God of Israel, says. Take these documents, both the sealed and unsealed copies of the deed of purchase, and put them in a clay jar so that they will last a long time. For this is what the Lord Almighty, the God of Israel, says. Houses, fields, and vineyards will again be bought in this land."
Wow, so your job is a biblical job.
It is. It is. And some interpret this as Jeremiah being the first register of deeds.
Well, all right.
So I'm very happy to follow in follow such a godly given duty. So I just wanted to bring that to everyone's attention.
Yeah, that's
very
nice.
Neat. So, but as far as Michigan goes, the Office of the Register of Deeds was in the Constitution, 1835. We are charged to record, retrieve, and protect documents. We keep those documents in our office. The Berrien County Register of Deeds office is the official recording office for the county, for all land records. We record Berrien County's history in the form of land records. So all documents pertaining to real property, we keep those secure and protect them in perpetuity for today's generation and future generations. And all of this is done to ease and maintain the ease of commerce in the county as well as in the state. So let's talk about land records and why they're important. So they allow the chain of title to be reviewed. This then allows a title insurance company to offer you insurance for a sale or for a purchase. It helps to keep costs of mortgages down, your interest rates down, based on the chain of title. If it's a clean chain of title, then it obviously it's a better transaction for them and a lower risk. Copies of your document that's recorded can always be purchased in our office. They're always available in our office, and these are considered to be prima facie evidence, which just means that, heaven forbid something happened and you have a house fire or something and you can't find your deed or it's just been misplaced, you can come get a copy for us if someone's asking for it. If you need it for a court purpose or if you need it for your attorney's helping you with some other transaction. And then also, it establishes ownership. Chain of title can establish ownership. Deeds do not have to be recorded. Nothing has to be recorded in our office, but it's always in your best interest to do this. Your recording gives the public notice that you have interest in a specific real property. Michigan is a race notice state, and by recording the document, it may determine the priority of title should there ever be a dispute. Again, real estate is most likely your best, your highest asset and your most valuable asset, and you want to protect that. So recording that will help with that. Yes, Pastor?
Why would somebody not want to record a deed? Is there some advantage, like they just want to be private or they don't want the public to know? Or why would somebody not want to do it?
Well, I think part of it is some people are private. They just don't want their name out there. I'll be real honest with you. Sometimes I give talks and people get kind of freaked out when all of a sudden they realize that all their information is out there public and someone can just look on our website to find it. I think sometimes grandma and grandpa did the deed. They stuck it in their safe. They had it. And then all of a sudden, you know, someone brought a document to us to be recorded that was actually executed in 1995. That's happened. So why they don't, you know, I don't know. Maybe
so
they're thinking someone
else's. So mostly
a privacy
issue, maybe. They don't want their names or information in public records somewhere.
For some, I think.
Yeah.
Some may think. Sometimes I've heard people come into our office and they think the attorney did it. They sat with the attorney, but maybe what they paid the attorney didn't include him recording it. I don't know. You know, so sometimes it's just a miscommunication as well. But it's not, we have recorded documents, like I said, that have been executed years ago, years past, so.
Is there a fee?
There is a fee for recording. $30 to record the document, and then it depends on what it is. Sometimes there's additional fees for tax certification or transfer tax on conveyance documents. So, yeah. And then, what I want to talk to you about, what I mentioned, the contents of the deed. Part of it is requirements, statutory requirements. So I'll try to go through these relatively quickly because this is something that I can help you with in the office. This is something that you can look up online and you can see exactly what it is. But we need to know the document title, so whether it's a warranty deed, whether it's a mortgage, that type of thing. There has to be certain margins for the pages, parties involved, the grantor, grantee, their name and address. Like I said, I had mentioned before, consideration on all conveyance documents and easements. The draftee, so whoever prepares your document, we need their name and their address as well, dates, when the document is effective, when it was signed, notary acknowledgments, and description of the property. I would advise you not to use the description that comes on your tax bill. Sometimes that is truncated because it doesn't fit within the system. You want to make sure that you have your entire parcel. So it's always worth it to go ahead and engage with a professional, whether it be a surveyor, whether it be someone in the GIS department at the county, an attorney perhaps, someone that can verify your legal description. We had a family that had 20 acres. They did the application. They went through the land split. They were going to give 5 acres to their son. They did that with the local level. It was approved. And then they moved on to the county. It was approved. So they had to file an application and pay fees. They paid the surveyor to come out and divide the land. Here's my 5 acres and here's the other 15. When they created the actual deed to give the property to the son, the 5 acres, they just copied what they had on their original deed and they deeded all of their property to their son. So they now didn't own anything. So luckily,
unknowingly they did.
Unknowingly,
that.
Yes.
Yeah.
So luckily it was their son and he could deed back that 15 acres.
Wow.
They then involved the surveyor to make sure that they had the proper, you know, legal description and give it back.
Who caught that?
So lots of times things are caught if you go to a lender and you want to do like a home improvement loan or something. This particular one, it was caught relatively quickly, and I think someone just alerted them when they were recording it through the process that this was the entire 20 acres.
Somebody from your office or?
I don't know if it was our office, I believe it was GIS upstairs. So just so you know, if you bring a document in, a conveyance document, we send it upstairs. That is their expertise, legal descriptions. And they just kind of verify it. Make sure it closes, make sure it kind of makes sense with what you're saying, where it is. If not, if they can't can't get it to close, if it doesn't seem right, they will alert the person, the presenter, that's bringing in the document. And then it is up to the presenter to say yes or no, I want to record it. Statutorily, I have no authority to reject it if it includes a legal description, but we do that as a courtesy.
What does GIS stand for?
Graphic Information System.
Okay. So they're just verifying the legal description is what you think it is?
Yes.
That kind of
yeah.
thing? Okay.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. So, but very important. I'm sorry?
I have one question.
Yeah.
Okay, now on a description of a piece of land, they're now doing GPS surveying, right?
Well, some are.
Some are. Well, most, is that the accepted one now? Or?
That depends who you talk to.
That's what I mean, because we had a property next door to our farm, got surveyed, and it's not what I think it was when we had it surveyed in 1990.
Oh, okay.
So now the stakes are moved a little bit. I'm going, for the guy going this and the guy shooting down, which one is acceptable? And, we're not going to argue the point. It's a
right.
matter of feet.
Yeah.
It's just a situation. How did that change? The last survey, the stake was over there 3 feet.
So, like I said, it depends who you talk to. So, I kind of get an earful of this every night because my husband is actually a surveyor. I don't know if you guys knew that or not. So he would say definitely talk to the surveyor.
Okay.
As opposed to the guy coming up, coming around with, you know, his cell phone and beaming off the satellites.
Okay.
I will say that if you go to the county's GIS website, those lines are approximate.
Okay.
Okay, so.
Approximate lines.
Yeah, so when people look at that kind of stuff, that's approximate. So the only way to truly know where your, you know, property ends, is to have it surveyed. So, that's what I would say. So it depends who you ask. Sorry, that doesn't really help you, but. And the other thing too is I had, my grandma lives on Cleveland Avenue. She lived on Cleveland Avenue, out in Glendora. She had a very nice rectangle 5-acre piece of property. She lived next to a farm. A working farm. And every spring, the plow just kind of took a little bit more off that corner, just a little bit more off that corner. You know how those wide turns go. grew up on a farm, so I definitely know about the wide turns. But when it came time to sell that property, we had it surveyed. We could put the stakes out and put little split rail fencing up. And you can see. So again, that description on that deed was so important as far as the survey coming out, the survey happening, and being able to say this is indeed 5 acres. So when it was time to sell it. So just good things to keep in mind. Other things that are important or that are required on a document, again, we go through these if you come into the office. The color of the ink, the color of the paper has to be legible, should be a certain font size. You know, you don't have to cram everything on one page. It can be multiple pages. That's totally fine as well. And then, of course, the notary requirements. And then also in addition to the requirements, we want to talk about the subject matter. And this is where it becomes important of actually making sure that your intent is instructed on the paper so that it's done exactly as you wish. So again, you want to protect your interests, and you want to have a clear and concise description of what is happening. I am giving my property to Pastor. So I want to make sure that it's clear that I'm the grantor, that he's the grantee. I want to make sure that we know how he's receiving the paper, or receiving the property, whether he's receiving it as Pastor Measle or Martin Measle or whatever, however we do that, so that we communicate and we make sure that everyone's interests are protected there. It's important to verify the property description again, and like I was saying, important to know how and who is receiving the property, excuse me. Recording, again, is your public notice that you own this property. So it is important, and it's important to make sure that it's clear and concise so that your interest is out there and the public realizes it. A recorded document may not be altered. So when you're creating your document, you have to think about how you took property before. If I'm selling my property to Pastor Measle, if I took it as Laura Ganaki, so when I owned it, I took it as my maiden name, and then I got married. But Laura Freeling has no record of owning this property. So I might want to word my deed such that Laura Freeling, formerly known as Laura Ganaki, as grantor, will convey this property to Pastor Measle. Martin Measle. I could drink
more. Yeah, that's all right. That's my name.
So, and you just need to make sure that things are kind of taken care of, that chain of title can be clear throughout, and that anyone searching it sees that and realizes that and knows that Laura Freeling is indeed Laura Ganaki that previously owned that property. Let's see. We also want to avoid unintended consequences. Sometimes people have the best intentions at heart, but then when they carry through with what they're doing, it doesn't have the effect that they want. We had a woman, she was widowed, she came in and she wanted to give the property to her children. So when she conveyed the property from herself to herself and her four children, she included her four children's spouses. So now she had 9 people on the property. Then she came in a couple months later because she was trying to get a home improvement loan. And not only she had to apply for it, but her four children and her four children's spouses had to apply for it because of the way that they had took tenancy. So they all had an interest in this property. So then they had to get all four children and all four spouses to sign off on it to give it back to her so that she could redo everything. And perhaps this is when she wants to do, really what she wanted to do was like a ladybird deed. And we will talk about that in a minute. But again, some unintended consequences. Have the children been trying to buy a house or move or get a loan? They very well may have been told no because they already own this property that already has a lien on it. And therefore, the mortgage company, the lender, the home improvement people would say, no, I'm sorry, you're too high of a risk, so we can't do this. So we want to think about how we're doing that to make sure that those consequences don't happen. So document needs to be complete when it comes in. To record your document has to be an original, has to have original signatures. We call it a wet signature, the pen, the actual pen that you signed it with. It needs to be notarized. Again, pursuant to MCL 600.916, I can't give you legal advice. That includes telling you what to record, how to record it, when to record it. That includes determining ownership or helping you prepare the document, which is why everything needs to be done before it comes to us. I can only help you with the statute part of it. And this is why I definitely suggest that people talk with a qualified attorney when they're preparing their documents. One that's well-versed in Michigan law. Part of the handouts I gave you, there was the yellow sheet. Know that I cannot recommend any one attorney over another, but this was a list of attorneys that came to us from the bar, from the Southwest Michigan Bar Association. I reached out to them because I see a need in the office. There's lots of people who need help writing a deed, actually creating it. And so all of these people said that they would do these types of things. Some of you may have an attorney already, and that's fine. But if not, at least this is an option, someone you can call to and talk to. So you need to be able to assure that your interest is conveyed as intended. Again, we talked about the mom who inadvertently gave the property to all 9 people then. We also had a grandfather came into the office. He created his own document. He drafted his own document. We recorded it. He was giving his property to his grandson. 2 days later, the grandson's mom came in and said, get this 15-year-old off of your records. I had no authority to do that. I can't do that. Now, can the 15-year-old in turn sign the property over to grandpa? No, not legally. He's not of age yet. Can the mom sign for him? Not legally. She's not been declared his guardian. She is his mom, but she's not his guardian. So does she have to go to court to be declared guardian just to give property back to grandpa? I'm not an attorney, but theoretically, yeah, that's what she would have to do. So talking to an attorney, you tell them what you want, who you want it to go to, how you want it to go to. They help you work all of these things out. We also had a gentleman come in that came into the office. He drafted his own ladybird deed, and he also went to get a home improvement loan like 2 months later, and then came back because he had granted all of his property to his cousin, even though it was a ladybird deed. It wasn't drafted well. It wasn't drafted with the right terms. So all the property went immediately to his cousin. So he didn't own property any longer. So he had to have the cousin come back in, deed the property back to him, convey it back to him, and then he had to redo a ladybird deed so that he could then keep the property, do what he wanted with the property, but then when it's time, then it goes on to his cousin. So kind of an expensive way and out of your way, lots of steps that you don't really need to take.
So it sounds like a lesson there is make sure you have somebody who knows what they're doing help you do it.
Yeah.
Instead of trying to do it yourself.
Yeah, which is exactly why I suggest that people talk to an attorney.
And a poorly written deed is a mess.
Mm-hmm.
It's called billable hours. I went to it when my father passed away. He had a poorly written deed, and I mean the billable hours.
Yeah,
definitely. So you'll see that little saying I have, that little quote that I have on the bottom. An ounce of prevention is worth many dollars of anxious hours and cure. Anxious hours are for sure. I mean, I've seen people crying in our office because they're so frustrated. And, you know, no one wants to pay an attorney. I really don't blame them. But they're there to help with these types of things. So sometimes paying a little bit more upfront can definitely make it better down the road. And the other thing, too, is with tenancy. Tenancy is very important. This was the mom's problem that gave it to the four kids. She did tenants in common where each owner had an interest in the property. There's also joint tenants. That's equal ownership. Sometimes you might see it written as joint tenants with rights of survivorship, which is a nice way to say it. That gives the survivor of the joint tenants all, you know, their interest in the property. So they can move on, they can sell, they can refinance, they can do whatever they want.
That would typically be a married couple, right? Joint tenants with rights of survivorship?
It could be. But also, tenancy by the entirety is also for married folks as well, which kind of means the same thing. But sometimes I've seen it written tenants by the entirety with rights of survivorship as well. So we're double covering to make sure that we're good. So, but again, talking to an attorney who's well-versed in Michigan real estate would actually absolutely be able to explain all that to you and make sure that your deed is written proper. I know maybe some of you have questions on this, maybe some of you have done it already. So, but let's talk a little bit about a ladybird deed versus an enhanced life estate versus a trust versus a will. The main gist of estate planning is to ensure that your savings and your assets go to your heirs, not to your creditors, and to keep your heirs out of probate court. That's the main thing. So looking at a ladybird deed, that enables the owners to transfer real estate to beneficiaries without going to probate, if it's drafted properly. This is something where you deed the property to yourself, and then you determine later who the beneficiary is. You have the rights. In a properly drafted ladybird deed, you have the rights to maintain your property, sell your property, refinance your property, whatever you want to do. And then when it's time, then it's an immediate transfer on to your children, or your beneficiaries, I should say. Maybe it's not your children. Maybe you get mad at your children. maybe, while you're still living, you have it going to your son, and you get mad at your son, and then you can go in and redo it and have it go to your daughter. And this is the luxury of a ladybird deed, because the conveyance has not happened yet. It doesn't happen until someone has passed. So a ladybird deed is a good type of document in the state of Michigan. An enhanced life estate, depending on how they're drafted, I've seen some drafted enhanced life estate ladybird, kind of a combined thing. But you got to be careful because sometimes the life estate will have the current owner and the future owners, so your beneficiaries, but recognized as all as current owners. So again, that's kind of goes with that joint tenants. So it's important to know how our tenancy is, what the effect of this type of thing is going to be, of what we're saying is going to be. And of course, then you would need permission to say, you know, I want to sell this, or I want to refinance, or I want to redo my bathroom type thing. A trust is a very nice tool as well. With a trust, it's an immediate effect as soon as you sign it, and it's funded. It's usually done through an attorney. With a trust, you are the trustee, and then you have successor trustees. So when it's time, then the successor trustee makes sure that your wishes are carried out as is provided by the trust. So that's usually a good tool and a good way to do it. Lots of times when people have a trust, they will then put the property into the name of the trust. And that's what allows the successor trustee to then move that property if they want to sell it or give it to kids or grandkids or whomever. And then lastly, we have a will. The important thing about a will is to remember that the effect happens after you pass. So, my mouse isn't working.
It's probably just off the edge.
It was good. Thank you. The important thing to know about a will as well is that a will doesn't convey property. Authority does. So if you don't have a ladybird deed, if you don't have a trust, if you don't have an enhanced life estate, but you have a will, I heard this from my cousin and I kind of argued with him a little bit about it. My wife is going to be fine because I have a will. Well, again, the will does not convey property. So she has to take that will to the court and she has to say, this is the will, I'm supposed to get the property. And the court says, you have to prove who you are. You have to petition the court that this is what you want. You have to wait for the notice period. You know, you're paying the filing fees all along the way. So it can be a tool. It's a good guide for the family, but it does not convey property. For personal property, for your assets, it's probably a good thing. You know, I want my son to have my elephant collection. And I want my daughter to have my china. You know, I mean, that's fine. Those are personal items. But for property, it's a little bit different. The ladybird deed, the enhanced life estate, have the authority to convey that property. The trust, within the trust, and the property is owned by the trust, then the trustee has the authority to do it. But with a will, nothing has been conveyed yet. So it's just some things to think about when you talk about that. Does that make sense, everyone?
From the will, you still have to go through probate?
You may.
Oh, no.
If there's property involved, most likely you will. Because someone has to be given the authority to sell that property, or even if you want to keep it for yourself, like if you're an only child and your mom and dad only had a will, you want to keep it for yourself, but you still need that property in your name. Someone has to have the authority to give it from the decedents now to you. So, and that has to be given by the court, letters of authority to move the property. You see?
Norm, what is the process for obtaining a ladybird deed?
So you can talk to any attorney who would help you do it, or who would help you create it. There are places that has forms or templates online that you can download and look at. Or you can self-create your own if you want. But this is when I suggest that you talk to an attorney. That way you know that the beneficiaries, it's exactly as you want, how you want. Some people say, go so far into their deeds as to say, I'll use my family for example, it went from my mom to the four children, and then if the four children weren't living, if one of the four children wasn't living, it was to go to their children, kind of thing. So an attorney, I think, can best help you write that. Make sure the intent is there and the conveyance is there as you want.
Is that a long process? Or?
I don't think for a lot of these attorneys it's not. There's several real estate attorneys that do this type of thing all the time. So
just on this yellow sheet.
Yeah, that was one of the things that I had asked for. So
thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, an attorney, like we just talked about, is able to help you draft your document. They draft your document, and they probably have a notary public available. And most attorneys, if you want, will probably send it to our office to record. So right there, the attorney is your one-stop shop. So you get everything taken care of with one call, one visit.
And one bill.
And again, I can't recommend any one attorney over another. Like I said, this handout is just attorneys that contacted me and said that they would be willing to help folks in these types of situations. Because they know what a problem it is when the chain of title gets clouded. So,
of course, what's nice about most attorneys, they'll tell you the range of what it's going to cost you.
Yeah.
When you sit down in front. It's not like, well, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're not going in blind. You're not waiting for that.
Really. Yeah. And if you do decide to talk to an attorney, one question you might want to ask them, and this is up to you, do you want them to do that title work? Do you want them to make sure that you have a clean chain of title before you move forward? Some will do it without, and some will do it. I'm sure if they do it, it's more costly. But it's just something that you should be aware of as you're talking to them. Again, an ounce of prevention is worth many dollars and anxious hours of cure. So I just can't stress that enough. I see a lot of that in our office. But if you have questions, you can always call me or ask me. I'm happy to help. Yes, sir?
When most people, when they buy or sell property, they use a realtor. Where does the attorney come from when the realtor does it?
So it kind of depends. I mean, you can always tell the realtor that you want your attorney to write up the document. Lots of times, if you're involving a realtor, you're most likely going to do some sort of warranty deed. And then that involves the title company. And I believe that most title companies have an attorney on staff that helps create and draft documents as well. Now, will they sit down and talk with you and make sure that it goes from, you know, from Mary Jane to Kelvin, to Mason, to Olivia, you know, I don't know. I don't know that part of it. I'm sure they probably would if you talked to them, but that's kind of where that goes.
Okay.
So I guess just kind of corollary to that, because I bought my house through a realtor. Mm-hmm. I didn't hire an attorney. So it's probably a warranty deed that was prepared by the title company.
Most likely. I could
check your website or come to your office to see if that's in fact the case.
Absolutely, yep.
And yep. I could get a copy of the deed because
yes,
I don't
could.
Think I have a copy.
Yes, you could.
Okay.
Or possibly the mortgage company. I don't know. Sometimes
okay.
It's not uncommon for them to get involved as well because there's usually a loan involved at that time. Sometimes not, but most times. So most likely from the title company, but they all kind of work in conjunction to get everything together. And so, yeah, when you do those kinds of things, just make sure to ask them about the tenancy, make sure it's what you want, and make sure, you know, that they've checked the legal description as well, which most title companies do, so they're pretty good about that. Okay, so just some things that I see happening in our office, I want you guys to be aware and informed about. I call them questionable practices. Whenever you receive an unsolicited offer, take it for, be skeptical. Don't even take it for anything. Just be skeptical about it. I don't know. Maybe it's legit. Maybe it's not. Maybe it's a legit offer, but maybe it's not legit of the person that it's coming from. We had a company going around knocking on people's doors. I will give you $1,000. Let me sell your house for you. Doesn't have to be now. Be 5 years from now, 10 years from now. Does that sound good? Sign on the dotted line.
Yeah, what am I signing for?
Yeah, that one ended up being a 40-year lien on the house. It was...
So there was like fine print that somebody didn't read, they signed their name, they received money, and they signed a contract without knowing it.
Most likely. I can't believe someone would sign that contract knowingly. But either they just had, you know, bad advice, or the $1,000 sounded really good to them right now. But in essence, what it did was, like I said, it was a 40-year contract with this real estate firm that they just wanted to list the house as a listing firm. It didn't only affect the current owner, it affected future owners. So, okay, fine. So I say, you know, I'm going to sell your house. We sell it to someone. They don't know this lien is on there. So then if they sell it after him before my 40 years is up, I can come back on the person that he sold it to and say, you owe me. And that's kind of what was happening. That's how that contract was written. So just be skeptical. Call around. Talk to someone you trust. Seek advice from a professional in the field. Always, you know, talk to an attorney before you sign a contract, or again, someone that you trust. I received personally a letter from, his name was Thomas West. He was in Georgia. Loved his letter. It had the Christian symbol on it. It said, God bless you. I'm happy to sell your property for you, or I want to buy your property. This was vacant land. I want to buy your vacant land. You know, just call me or text me anytime. No, I'm not going to do that. He was based out of St. Mary's, Georgia. There was a commissioner brought in to me. One of her constituents received a similar offer or a similar solicitation. It was called Land of Nuggets, and it was out of Pasadena, California. They sent this person a letter, but they included a purchase agreement in it. And I believe it was like $25,000. Just sign this, send it back to me, I'll take care of everything. I'll do all your closing costs, I will, you know, record the documents, and I'll get you your money. Legit, I don't know who it's coming from. I've never heard of them before. Obviously, they're in California. I don't know who that is. Does $24,000 sound really good right now? Sure, I could definitely use that. But yet, if I'm going to sell my property, I think I'm going to engage with someone who knows the area, knows the value, etc. Especially around here, values of vacant land seems to honestly be quite high right now. So, and then there was another one that came, Whitestone Land Offer, and this one was Phoenix, Arizona. This was the same type of thing. I want to buy your vacant land. Here's an offer. Again, it was around that $25,000. Sign this purchase agreement, send it back to me, and I'll take care of everything. So those kind of offers are out there. I've also heard that there are people impersonating the owners that have been contacting our local realtors and saying, I want to sell that property. But they're trying to do it without, you know, without a contract, a cash type thing, a cash transaction. And I think our realtors have caught on to it. I don't think anything's been finalized this way, but they have received several calls from folks who are impersonating the owners. So, not that you can help that one, but some people are out there. Unfortunately, there's evil in the world. And they try to take advantage.
Everyone were just Christian.
Yeah, I know. So, this particular one, I just got a call the other day. This seems to be kind of cyclical. It is, this one was half-folded. This one was tri-folded. Kind of looks like a check, right? Mm-hmm. And it says it's coming from the county deed records. I'm paying you $199. No, that's not happening. That's not right. This is actually for a home warranty. Some people have home warranties. Some people don't. If you want to buy a home warranty, you should be the one to say, I want to buy a home warranty, and I'm going to do the research with the company that I want to. We actually had someone come into our treasurer's office and try to cash this. So, you know, sometimes you just don't understand what it is. It looks different. It looks legit. It looks like a good thing. And I'm not saying that you can't buy a home warranty from these people, but the way they make all of this look, like this is your last notice, you know, this is the property, this is the mortgager. They go so far as to put the mortgage company that you had on it. So it kind of looks legit. So just think about those things. Be aware that those are happening. I'm not saying that you shouldn't buy a home warranty, but, you know, if you do, again, it should be on your terms. Snowbirds. I don't know if you have any snowbirds here or not, but, of course, snowbird theft can be a thing. I suggest that you know your neighbors, that you're friends with your neighbors, if you have neighbors that you trust, and that they'll call you, like if they see a for sale sign go up in your yard while you're in Florida. That actually happened one time up north, especially during the COVID when people were scarce. People went everywhere to work and wherever they could go, you know, to move around. And a lot of people went down to Florida for a long time, a couple, 2 weeks or so. The other thing, I also gave you a handout about Property Alert. Property Alert is a email notification, it's a free email notification service for documents that are recorded in our office. Sometimes people think, well, if someone is forging my name to sell my property, if someone is forging my name to apply for a mortgage, I'll see that and I should know that. And it's very easy to tell that it wasn't my signature. The problem with those types of crimes is that the victim doesn't know what's happening when it happens. So it's sometimes 6 months, a year and a half before they find out. And by that time, the perpetrator has taken the cash and is long gone. The benefit of Property Alert is it's an early notification. So when a document's recorded in our office, if you sign up for this subscription, and you fill in the certain criteria, if your criteria is matched, it sends you an email and it says something has been recorded in the office. And then we can take a look at it. If it's something that you're expecting, it might be a discharge of mortgage. Maybe it's an easement that you engaged with, you know, with a neighbor or something about a shared driveway and they just finally recorded it. Maybe it's an assignment of mortgage. No one ever knows an assignment of mortgage is coming. But when the mortgage companies sell the mortgage, they record all that information. So if you look up your name in our records, if you own property, you'd probably be surprised how many entries are actually there under your name. But again, those things are all good. If you saw a quitclaim deed or a new mortgage that you know you didn't apply for, this would alert you right away and allow you to take action. So it empowers you to take action right away, instead of waiting for a notification to come to you from some other source. So, just something to think about. Foreclosure rescue scheme. I've heard of folks who get called by these people that say, I know you're in foreclosure you're in foreclosure status. We can help you get one payment, one low payment. Fine, sign me up. They give them the credit card information, they pay their fees, and they never hear from them again. So, again, just if something like that, or if you have friends or something like that that you want to engage in, just know who you're dealing with and you know, make a few calls and see, you know, prices wise, references on the company, that type thing. Anything to just make them know that you're aware as well. And then this one, a gentleman came into our office with this and said, is this legit? This was not legit. This was a notice of intent to levy taxes, which was sent by the state of Michigan. It's kind of blurry, so I apologize. But basically it says, you owe $32,000. Call us right now and pay it, otherwise we're going to put a levy on your taxes, or we're going to put a lien on your property. I'm telling you right now, the state of Michigan will not notice you that they're putting a lien on your property. They're just going to put the lien on your property. So these types of things, the state would never call and say, you know, give us your credit card over the phone. That's not going to happen. So this one was actually proved to be a scam. The others, questionable, right? So, and then, of course, we talked about getting a copy of the deed in the office. That is governed by state statute. So if you come into my office, it's a dollar a page. But there might be some people out there who say, I can get a copy of your deed for you for $75. I don't know if they're going to put it on pretty paper. I don't know if they're going to frame it. But you can get a copy in our office for a dollar. So, again. And really, that's all I had. Again, I know I gave you probably more information than you wanted to know, but again, I just think having knowledge of the totality of everything helps out the little steps along the way. You all have my contact information. It's right here as well. So I'm happy to, if there's any more questions. Yes?
I hear all those ads for home title lock.
Yes.
Is that legit? Does that, what they say, you know, somebody can steal your title online or whatever, does that happen?
It has happened. It has happened. I don't think it's happened not quite like that in Berrien County. We've had some fraud in Berrien County. A lot of it has been disgruntled siblings, you know, when mom or dad pass. Some of it has been, I know, for example, one was an accident. The gentleman, the neighbor, was trying to, I'm trying to think how this was. He was adding a parcel to his property, but it was adjacent, but grabbed the adjacent parcel's description. And those people, this was before Property Alert was available, the people happened to be tooling around on the internet and looked on Zillow and they saw that their property was for sale. And so they called, they were scared, and they said, what happened? And we investigated and did some research and found out that their neighbor had recorded it with their parcel number. Now, did he own that parcel and did he have the ability to do that? No. But he just put a giant cloud in the title. So if the neighbor, unbeknownst to him, all of a sudden is trying to sell or to refinance or something, that's going to be halted. And then, of course, they need him to take care of it because he was the one that added it to his, you know, to himself. So the home title lock is a fee. There's a fee for that. Mm-hmm. It's my understanding that if there's a claim, they might give you some compensation to help pay for that. I don't know what that is, so just know what you're paying for if you want to pay for it. But they do the same thing that Property Alert does.
So this would be an alternative
mm-hmm.
to home title lock, and this is free
it's
from
free.
Your office.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, it is free.
All right. So I can ignore those commercials.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but I'm not going to say that fraud doesn't happen in Berrien County. But it doesn't seem to happen as much as some others. I think one of the benefits of our system is that when you go online, if you go online and you look at your documentation, at your records that have been recorded, if you select an image to view, so say I find my warranty deed, I want to look at it. If I select it, I'm going to see a black box, a watermark. It's a watermark covering most of it. So people can't just peruse through the website and pull off and extract information. There's an effort. They have to go in and they have to purchase something so that they can get a full legal description or full names. So I think that's a benefit. I think that helps. But again, you know, I can't say that it's not going to happen. But this, again, gives you early warning and lets us address it or lets you address it right away. So
thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks very much, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You'll stick around for a few minutes if somebody
Absolutely.
Has other questions.
Absolutely.
All right. All right. Thank you, everybody. Why don't we rise and close with the Lord's Prayer? Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, and the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.
Thanks for coming. Have a good night.